Good morning. Good morning and welcome to the California Coastal Commission meeting of May 6th. Could we have the clerk call the roll, please?
Commissioner Ashajian.
Roll call.
Commissioner Ashajian.
Here.
Commissioner Blank.
Here.
Commissioner Berg.
Here.
Commissioner Weso. Commissioner Cram.
Here.
Commissioner Kruer.
Here.
Commissioner Gurney.
Here.
Commissioner Potter.
Here.
Commissioner Schallenberger.
Here.
Commissioner Wan.
Here.
Commissioner Clark.
Here.
Chair Neely.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. And we're taking things a little bit out of order this morning. We're going to start with public comment, and then we're going to have to go to closed session. And someone has their phone on, their BlackBerry, and it's interfering with the sound system. We ask you to turn those off at this time. So let me go to public comment first and invite Ed Gondor to the microphone. And you have 3 minutes, sir. We won't start until they get it on for you.
Somebody does have a BlackBerry real close to a mic, and that's a whole new buzz that's just occurred in the last 4 minutes.
Never fails with technical difficulties.
Right.
Well, my name is Ed Gondor. I'm with the Monterey Bay Shores Eco Resort. Early this morning, I was informed by Charles Lester that you're going to have a closed session today, and that we had submitted a letter requesting continuance on Friday to the commissioners, and that I probably should have an opportunity to make my comments. So that's why I'm here. Originally, I'd intended on actually coming tomorrow. Originally, I'd intended on coming tomorrow because the item regarding the Monterey Bay Shores Eco Resort is scheduled for tomorrow. I had conversations this morning with Sand City, with Steve Matarazzo, the planning director, city administrator now, and regarding our request for continuous, which he supports, and he had spoken previously to Commissioner Potter as well. I'm here because we're requesting a continuance for two main reasons. Reason number one, we're asking for a continuance so that to the next local hearing until August 2009, or soon after the water distribution permit has been resolved. Now, the question is, why are we asking for that continuance? Number one, the staff water analysis has been superseded by a Monterey court order of which I think has been entered yesterday. The matter was heard last week on the 29th of April and completely overturned the water district's initial denial and removed most of the restrictions on the distribution permit. Number two, the Monterey Peninsula Water Management District will be reconsidering the water distribution permit based on staff's indication to me by no later than June 10th, 2009. Number three, the staff produced 300-page report, which allowed applicant only 1 week to review, and it was a 300-page report, and as fast as I can read, it was very difficult to amass the consultants and the folks necessary to respond. Number four, there really has been insufficient time to discuss the conditions of approval for the eco-resort project. Number five, there needs to be more dialogue between staff and us regarding the remaining issues once the water issue is resolved. So I think the second main point that I would like the commissioners to address and perhaps request is that I'm asking your assistance, commissioners, to direct staff to meet with us and the city of San City, which heretofore has been kept in the dark, unfortunately, and work collaboratively on receiving the remaining resolving the remaining issues and conditions of approval before the next hearing so that to streamline the process. I might parenthetically add that I had a discussion earlier this morning with a staff member who indicated that they would not like to meet with us. So I'm just concerned. I think we need your assistance to resolve this issue. It's difficult on a project. This is an environmentally sustainable project of significant magnitude for the country and Monterey. And it's difficult to achieve the kind of results, both for the commission and for the applicant, without a dialogue. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, sir. David DeLange.
Steve, do you have it up? Thank you. And I need a click. Hi, I'm David DeLange. I am president of Los Angeles Audubon, but I come here mainly speaking on behalf of the Coalition to Save the Marina, of which I am the executive director. The Commission has just sent Los Angeles County its adopted revised findings on the periodic review of the Marina Del Rey LCP. To me, it looks pretty good. I was pretty happy that, generally speaking, the document, the revised findings, which changed wording after it was originally written, generally reflect the will of the Commission, and that's the standard of review. Your discussion of it is the standard of review, your transcript. There is, however, one exception I'd like to call to your attention. I've discussed this with Jack Ainsworth in a friendly way this morning, and I hope it just has to do with a clarification issue. The correction has to do with the following wording. Mr. Kinsey, in a motion January 2008, this is with respect to the idea of comprehensively amending an LP as opposed to piecemealing it when you amend it. Mr. Kinsey passed a motion, the commission passed his motion 11-0, that reads as follows. In preparation for amending the LCP, the county should undertake a comprehensive study of anticipated future development that includes all pending project-driven amendments, fulfillment of the asset management strategy, and other facilities identified through a community planning process. What happened was that the wording that ended up was somewhat different. And the wording is, in preparation for amending its LCP, the county should undertake a comprehensive LCP update instead of the word study. LCP update replaces study. Now, this was discussed. The problem by the commission, and I think that Mr. Ainsworth is trying to accurately reflect the will of the commission, the problem is that there's an ambiguity here. Think about it. Look at the wording. In preparation for amending, what we should undertake is a comprehensive LCP update. But an LCP update is an amending process. So it's almost redundant. It says in preparation for amending, you should undertake a comprehensive amendment. What the will of the commission clearly reflected, and Jack and I agreed in the transcript, is there should be a study of all projects simultaneously, concurrently, studied at once. Then that should lead to a comprehensive update or comprehensive amendment, an amendment done all at once regarding all projects covered by the descriptors here. Unfortunately, this wording, in its best attempt to arrive at that conclusion, doesn't get there because it leaves us feeling like there's an ambiguity. So I'd ask, based on various reasons, but mainly that the wording of the commission should be adhered to, that I would ask that the word study be replaced with, that it be stuck back in, that it should be a comprehensive overall study, or that somehow the wording should reflect the following truth, that first you have a comprehensive study, then a comprehensive amendment, and only then. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Tom Roth? While Mr. Roth's coming up, Commissioner Wan would like to just say something to the previous speaker.
I think we had this discussion at the revised finding stage, and the commission made it clear that what it wanted, you may do a study in advance. What it wanted was a comprehensive LCP update, not just a study. And so I'm not sure that I believe that what staff has done does reflect what the commission said.
Madam Chairman, I absolutely agree with Commissioner Wan. That was exactly what we indicated.
All right, thank you. Mr. Roth, 3 minutes.
Good morning. My name is Tom Roth. I'm legal counsel for Security National, and I'm here in support of their request for continuance from tomorrow's hearing. I did want to make one additional point in addition to Mr. Gondar's points, and that is that we have organized a number of consultants to come to tomorrow's hearing. So after your executive session today, we'd like for your legal counsel to let me know if the continuance is granted so that we don't have to have all those people come and incur that expense.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Roth. So that concludes our public comment, and we have need to go to closed session at this time. And will that be in this meeting staff or this meeting room staff? Okay, so we'll have to ask the public then to leave the chambers here so that we can go into closed session. While we're doing that, if we could just recognize former Commissioner Mike Riley, who's in the audience. Great to see your smiling face. I hope you're going to stick around for a little while today.
He is. He's buying lunch.
Sounds like bullshit to me.
Okay, we bring the meeting back into order. Okay. Ask the commissioners to return to the dais and staff. And we have concluded our closed session, and let me go to staff to see if there's anything to report.
Thank you, through the chair. Reporting out of closed session, the commission has granted a continuance on the SNG application. The continuance is the commission directed that a continuance be granted and that the application be heard before the end of December at a local hearing, and the local hearings are either August or December. And so with that direction, we will work with SNG to return to the court and change the return on the writ date.
Okay. Mr. Douglas, did you have anything to add?
Yes, Madam Chair. I wanted to respond to one comment that Mr. Gondor made during his public comment, and that was that he had asked to meet with staff, and staff had refused to meet with him. He actually asked me that question, and I said I was not prepared to meet. This matter is in litigation. We have a long history of misrepresentation from discussions that were had, and I'm concerned about making sure that we only meet when counsel advises us that it's appropriate. And my reference to concerns about this matter being in litigation were responded to by what litigation? And as we all know, there is litigation. So those are the reasons that we're declining to meet with them at this point.
Right, and I think it's important to put that on the record. Commissioner Schallenberger, did you have a comment?
Well, just to follow up on that, it does strike me, given the litigation that's gone on in the past, that I would urge staff to continue to communicate only in writing. I think it's important in order to be sure that there is a clear and concrete record on the communications. So I, for one, as one commissioner anyway, would urge staff to continue that policy going forward of communicating only in writing and with this project proponent.
Could the commissioner clarify whether that was a report out of closed session from the commission versus from an individual commissioner?
It's from...
Or whether or not the rest of the commission concurs in what Commissioner Schallenberger
right.
just said. I think that would be stronger for us.
Yeah, I believe the commission does concur with what Commissioner Schallenberger just stated. And Commissioner Wallen, did you have a
absolutely.
Comment?
I mean, given the history and what we saw the last time about the charges against staff and the misrepresentations of what people say, I think it's critical that that this policy be followed. And I would, for one, not, as a commissioner, not wish to see you do it in any other manner.
So in light of the chair's comment, we take that as direction from the commission. Thank
you. Okay, very good. Thank you. Let's go then to staff to see if there are any changes in our agenda today and go over the meeting ground rules.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. For the audience, if you wish to speak on an item on today's agenda, please fill out a speaker slip, and the speaker slips are located on the table just outside the meeting room. And please turn off any cell phones or other wireless devices when in the meeting room. These devices interfere with the webcast and create that annoying buzz, so please turn those off. Next, I'll go over the changes on today's agenda, starting on page 3. There are no changes on page 3. Page 4, item 8A, L.A. County Department of Public Works application, move to consent. Item 8B, the Cook application, move to consent. And item 8C, the AT&T permit application, is postponed. Moving on to page 5, there are no changes on page 5, so that brings us to page 6. And item 17A, Gotch and Matsui, move to consent. Moving on to page 7, item 22A, the Reclamation District permit amendment, is postponed. So that concludes the changes for today's agenda. So that brings us to item number 3. And item number 3 are the consent calendar permits for the Los Angeles County portion of the South Coast District. And staff is not aware of any opposition to the permit applications on the consent calendar and recommends the commission vote and approve the consent calendar.
Right, we have no speaker slips on this item. Commissioner Weso has made the motion. Commissioner Clark has seconded to approve the consent calendar. Is there any objection to unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the consent calendar is approved.
And the next item is item 4A. It's the administrative calendar for the South Coast District, Orange County. There is only one item. It's a dock replacement that's routinely approved by the commission. Therefore, staff recommends the commission concur with the executive director and approve the administrative calendar.
All right. Is there any objection to concurrence with the executive director on the administrative calendar? Seeing none, the commission concurs.
And item number 5 is the consent calendar for the San Diego District. There's one item. All the conditions are acceptable to the applicant. We have no known public opposition. Therefore, staff recommends the commission approve the consent calendar.
Okay. We have one speaker slip from the applicant, and that's available for questions only. So what's the pleasure of the commission? Commissioner Hueso?
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Hueso, second. A second by Commissioner Kruer to approve the consent calendar. Is there any objection to unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the commission approves.
The next item up is item number 6, and this is the Deputy Director's report for the South Central Coast District, which is a list of the waivers, immaterial amendments, and immaterial extensions for the district. And staff is not aware of any oppositions to the items on the in the District Director's report and recommends the commission concur with the Executive Director's determination on these matters.
Let me check with the commission. Is there any objection to concurrence? Seeing none, the commission concurs.
Next item is item number 7, and these are the permit items staff is recommending be moved to the consent calendar. Staff is recommending 2 regular calendar items be moved to the consent calendar, and those items are item 8A, the Los Angeles County Department of Public Works permit application, and item 8B, the Cook application. And staff recommends the commission vote and approve these items.
All right, we have no speaker slips on this item. What's the pleasure of the commission? We have a motion by Commissioner Hueso, a second by Commissioner Clark to approve the consent calendar. Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the commission approves the consent calendar.
That brings us to item number 9, and that is the Deputy Director's report for the South Coast District, and this includes both Los Angeles and Orange counties. The report includes a list of all the waivers, immaterial amendments, and extensions, in the district. Staff is not aware of any opposition to the items in the district director's report and recommends the commission concur with the executive director's determination on these matters.
Any objection from the commission to concurrence with the executive director on these items? Seeing none, the commission concurs.
Item number 10, there are no regular calendar items to be moved to the consent calendar, so that brings us to item number 11A. And I have a brief PowerPoint presentation for this, if you pull that up, item 11A. Is a substantial issue hearing on an appeal of a City of Long Beach coastal development permit. The applicant is the City of Long Beach Department of Parks and Recreation. The appellant is Lawrence Goodhue. The permit is to establish a weekly farmers market on Wednesdays in the parking lot of Marine Stadium in the City of Long Beach, as can be seen on this slide here. The Marine Stadium parking lot on weekdays when there are no special events is underutilized. If we could advance the next slide, please. This is not working. As you can see on this slide, this portion of the parking lot, when there are no special events in Marine Stadium, is underutilized. And in staff's view, the proposed farmers market does not raise any public access issues and is consistent with the city's certified local coastal program. Staff determined that this appeal was patently frivolous pursuant to Section 30,620D of the Coastal Act. However, this section does allow the appellant to pay a fee of $300 if he wishes to pursue the appeal. The appellant did pay the money, and so this is brought forward the commission today. The applicant raises 6 reasons for his opposition to this weekly event, including that, 1, there are other locations where this event could occur. 2, a grant deed for the property prohibits commercial uses in the Marine Stadium. 3, visitors to the weekly event remove part of a park from public use, as can be seen on the slide, that little park area there. Visitors to the weekly event negatively impact parking at Marina Vista Park. 5, the non-boating related, non-coastal dependent commercial operations sets the footprint for future commercialization of the public park. And finally, there's a potential for an automobile accident at the event in the Marine Stadium parking lot. Again, staff does not believe the proposed farmers market raises a substantial issue with respect to the provisions of the City of Long Beach's certified local coastal program or the access policies of the Coastal Act. The farmers market does not include any permanent facilities, and the city will review this permit on a yearly basis. Therefore, staff is recommending the commission find that there no substantial issue exists in this case with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed. And the motion for no substantial issue can be found on page 4 of the staff report. And this concludes staff's presentation on this item.
All right, let me look to the commissioners and start on my left. Are there any ex parte communications on item 11A? Okay, seeing none. Any on the right? All right, we have no speaker slips on this item. What's the pleasure of the commission? Mr. Potter?
Madam Chair, I move that the commission determine that appeal number A-5-LOB-09-062 raises no substantial with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under Section 30603 of the Coastal Act. Recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Potter and a second by Commissioner Ashajian. The maker and seconder are recommending a yes vote. Passage of the motion will result in a finding of no substantial issue. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, thanks.
All right. Is there any objection to unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the commission finds that appeal number A-5-LOB-09-062 does not present a substantial issue. Thank you. Oh, Commissioner Schellenberger.
Yeah. I hope this isn't out of order. Maybe I should be raising it in commissioner time. But it strikes me that if the staff determines that an appeal is frivolous and that $300 is actually an inadequate fee because it clearly costs the commission and in time and staff time much more than $300 to process this. So it's just a question, is this fee part of our fee schedule? And
It's in the statute. And when it was when this was amended at the request of the commission to allow the commission to have this kind of procedure, there were concerns expressed by members of the committee that it not be used to block public access to the appellate process. And we negotiated a compromise of $300, and that's in the statute.
I understand the logic, but at some point it should be put on a list of things to do someday because it was much more costly than $300 in order to get you guys to process.
That's true, but it wasn't intended to be reimbursement for the commission's work.
I know,
but it has been a deterrent in many, many cases. I can tell you that there are a lot. We would have a lot more appeals than we now have because a lot of people just didn't have the money to pay.
Commissioner Wan?
Yeah, I think you need to be careful when you think about going down that path in terms of we have confidence in our staff that they will make a decent judgment as to what is frivolous or what isn't, but you don't want it to be used as a way in case to just prevent people from appealing. So I think we need to be careful and think about that.
Okay. Moving on then to the South Coast District.
Yes, the next item 12 was the South Coast District Deputy Director's Report. It was just reported and approved as item number 9. And as 13, there are no items removed from the regular calendar to the consent calendar. That brings us to item 14A, 50955, the Bay Island Club. And I'd like to bring to your attention the addendum. There are about 12 letters and emails in that addendum that we just received last week that raise a number of concerns and in opposition to the proposed project. There was also a separate letter distributed this morning to you, and the applicant's representative has given the commission a letter this morning. They hand-delivered it to the commissioners at the hotel this morning, and staff just received it this morning, that they indicate that they are in support of the recommendation, but they are suggesting changes. In light of this information, staff would like to recommend that this item be postponed. it does appear that there is opposition that should be addressed at a local hearing. We have not had the opportunity to review the applicant's letter, and there are some significant concerns raised by the opposition that question the legality of the gate on the mainland side of the bridge, and we feel that we need to look into that because we do think that that would modify the staff's recommendation. It relates to the historic public use of that bridge. So I can stop there, and if the commission would like to discuss or take a vote on the question of postponement, and if it is not postponed,
okay, we do have a speaker slip from Mr. Jared Ficker on this as well, and so let me first let me just have you stop there. Let me go to the commission and see if there are any ex parte communications first. I'm starting on my left. Okay, Commissioner Potter, are you?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I had a brief conversation this morning with Jared Ficker in which he noted that he was in support of the staff recommendation except for one condition that he was concerned with, and that is that the need for some form of guarantee that there would be liability coverage of at least $25 million for liability if the public were to access this property and be injured. And that they would indemnify and hold harmless the applicant in any action against its relating to public use. He also stressed that this had been up for discussion for a significant period of time and hoped that direction could be given to staff today so this issue would be resolved and thus no further expense for the state.
Anyone else on ex parte? Mr. Meso?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Mr. Jared Ficker also met me this morning. We had a very, very brief conversation with this, the same information that was conveyed to Commissioner Potter.
Thank you. Commissioner Clark?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On Thursday, the 30th of April at 4 p.m. in the afternoon, Jared Ficker from California Strategies called me at my residence and provided this input. He gave a background of the project and the applicant's desire. The project is reconstructing the bulkhead. The city of Newport Beach owns the bulkhead around the island and the bridge of 75 feet from Newport Harbor to Bay Island. It's as he indicated, a project that estimated cost of $7 million, borne by the residents, the 24 residential properties on the island. The applicant indicated at that time that they're in agreement with the project and all the proposed conditions except two of the staff's recommended conditions. The staff did not want the bridge reconstructed in a manner that would require fill in the waterway, so the applicant designed the bridge with a single span. Now the staff wants public access on the bridge and believes that there's a nexus to public trust. The applicant was rebutting it at that time and indicated that the bridge is too narrow to accommodate pedestrian traffic. It can accommodate golf carts only. Offered enhanced public access, fishing amenities. And the second issue that they had was to keep...
Bless you.
He's okay.
Keep the gate of the on the peninsula side of the bridge closed, but possible remove it if anyone wants to take the liability and maintenance. The applicant believes there must be a demonstrated nexus of the project to diminishing access. The applicant asserts that there isn't any, but is happy to enhance the access in the area around the bulkhead, and asserted that a better area for enhancing public access is a better area for enhancing public access, and believes there's no known opposition to this project. Then on Monday, May 4th, I received a email from Ron Yeo, who's the architect for this project. It was addressed only to me, it appears. It says, I am working with the Bay Island for the last several years on this important project and was shocked when I read the staff report. I had designed a beautiful concrete bridge with less pilings than the existing ones, only to have the staff change it to a metal prefabs free span. But worse, special condition number two, the idea of public access on the bridge is very unworkable and dangerous concept. Allowing fishermen and on the narrow bridge is really a huge safety issue, especially if you add bikes. The bridge is the only access to the island, and one can picture the problem of narrow fishing pier with golf carts trying to get by fishermen and their equipment. It would be even worse for emergency personnel over the bridge, as well as kayaks trying to maneuver through the fishing lanes under the bridge. I don't know of any jurisdiction that will accept the liability for this situation. I urge your support for the project with deletion of the condition.
Right, thank you. Any other ex partes on my right? Sarah Wan? Mr. Wan?
Just very quickly, I didn't speak with anybody, but I did receive a fax from Mr. Ficker yesterday that apparently just got to staff this morning. And I just have a comment. When you fax something to the hotel, and I don't know how many other commissioners received it, this commission receives the charges for those faxes. And okay, because it says fax. Okay, as long as it was hand-delivered, that's fine. I was concerned that the commission was going to be billed 10 charges for these. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Kruger.
Madam Chair, I had an ex parte phone call that's on file, and then briefly this morning after breakfast, walking downstairs, I ran to Mr. Ficker. He handed me this May 5th letter that staff has mentioned and said that he was for public access and didn't get a chance to talk to him. I came right into the meeting, but I did have that brief discussion when he gave me the letter for this morning.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Crown?
Yes, I had a brief conversation with Jared Ficker this morning in which he talked about how they were in accord with the staff report except for the issue of the gate on the bridge and the issue of liability for people, potential users of the bridge and pedestrians.
Thank you. Commissioner Blank?
I received a email from Jared Ficker last night at 8:21 p.m. Suggesting that or stating that staff is intimating postponement, which we think is unreasonable since we're largely accepting their recommendation. We're going to oppose special condition two, but I convinced the client to be more pragmatic, and there were a set of attachments including the via fax, email, or hand delivery document that Commissioner Wan described. And I forward the email and attachments to staff for record.
All right, thank you. And we have a request from staff for a postponement. Commissioner Wan?
Yes, I'm going to move to postpone, and if I get a second, I'll explain why. Staff has made it clear that there are a couple of issues that still need to be resolved. Even I looked at the changes, and I don't necessarily know that I'm in agreement or disagreement with the changes, but this is a legal matter that needs to be looked at carefully to see if this language is acceptable to staff. Plus, apparently, staff has indicated that the public has raised some issues that they did not consider, so I think it's appropriate to continue it so that our legal staff can look at the language and the new issues that have arisen can be resolved.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just a question. I don't know whether the applicant's representative wants to address the question of continuance, but you might want to ask him.
I was just going to do that. And okay. Mr. Ficker, would you like to address the motion for postponement?
It's high tech, Jared.
Jared Ficker on behalf of Bay Island Club. We are in opposition of postponement. The request came from staff yesterday. We've worked very hard. This is a project that's been in the works for 5 years. We've already withdrawn and resubmitted this project once before. All the issues that became presented in letters and an addendum that was submitted to us on Monday have all been issues that have been in letters for years on this project. There are no new issues in our estimation. In fact, some of these same letters are very similar to letters submitted to the commission back in 2006. We've been at it for a long time. The bridge is and the bulkhead has the potential to fail. I apologize for giving you guys a letter to respond to this, but we worked to essentially agree to everything staff requested in this, and we've made all those modifications. And the day before the hearing to request postponement on something we've spent this much time and essentially accommodated all the staff recommendations seems completely unreasonable. And that's our perspective. We'd like to go forward, and we'd be more than happy to talk to the remaining issue and speak to that related to special condition number 2 in a public hearing, but I understand the question is for postponement right now.
Thank you. Let me go back to staff then.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The reason that we're requesting postponement is we think that there are two key issues that are raised in both the letters from the neighbors as well as from Mr. Ficker's letter that we have not adequately analyzed and addressed in the staff report. Public use of the bridge has always been the issue. The question of whether or not the gate on the mainland is permitted is key to our recommendation, because if it wasn't a permitted bridge, then the commission should be looking at it as if it doesn't exist. And we did not analyze it in that manner. And then the other issue that is significant is the impacts to fishing from the new location of the bridge. Staff has not looked at some of the questions that have been raised by the letters of opposition, and that is an impact. That is the fishing the public activity that's most affected by the bridge. And in the applicant's proposal, they are accepting the conditions but saying that no fishing would be allowed on the bridge if the bridge is open to the public. So the impact and the potential mitigation for that impact, we think, need to be addressed more fully in light of the new information, and that's why we're looking for a postponement.
And do you have a thought about when this item would come back to the commission?
We would work to try to get it back at the next meeting. It's the June meeting is in Marina Del Rey, and that would be a local hearing. I think the stumbling block may be just trying to get some information regarding the past public use, particularly from the city. But we will try to get it back on the June meeting.
Okay, we have a motion for a postponement. Commissioner Hueso?
This is a question for staff in terms of the material that was submitted. When was it submitted?
The letters of opposition?
Yes.
Last Friday.
So receiving letters of opposition is a normal process in our review. Is there any information contained in these letters that you think is relevant to the your recommendation?
Yes, it is the letter, the information in those letters that question the legality of the gate on the mainland and raise the significance of the impact on fishing that we don't think we thoroughly addressed in our staff report.
Now, as far as our review of applications, we have to consider information that's brought forward up until the public hearing is closed. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
What's to stop additional information from coming forward at a future date? I mean, we may postpone this, but that doesn't necessarily stop the inflow of new opposition or new information. Is that correct?
That's correct. And the way that this commission operates, your record is open until you close the public hearing. And there, it often happens that we get information at the last minute. And as you know, from time to time, we do request continuances because of that new information submitted at the last minute. And there's no way we can legally prevent that.
Right. Okay. So, and in that process, you're saying that the information that you have received in these letters hasn't been thoroughly vetted?
That's correct. And the legality of the gate is an important issue. And when Sherilyn and I talked about it before, that was really an issue we need to have an answer to. A satisfactory answer so that we can give you all the information you need.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Clark?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. As the commissioner from this region, had my colleagues not jumped before I could, I would have moved continuance. I understand Mr. Ficker's request, and I understand the issues with this being a long journey on this project, but quite frankly, the issues that have been raised by staff do need analysis, and I think it should be a hearing in the local area. And if I heard correctly, this ties into hearing it at our next meeting. Is that right?
Yes. We're going to try to bring it back by then. We'll need some information from the city, though.
Right. Okay. Well, I strongly support that.
All right. Commissioner Blank?
I had lots of questions, but I will defer to my colleague, Commissioner Clark, being the local representative, and will support his continuance.
All right. Commissioner Cram? You're good? All right. All right. So we have a motion and a second to postpone this matter and have it come back next month. Would you like to have another minute just to comment?
I'll work with staff in terms of whatever the sense of the commission is.
Could you put your name on the record for us?
Jared Ficker. Thank you. I'll work with staff whatever the sense of the commission is in terms of how they want to proceed. I will say we do need to confer schedules to make sure that June works. I'm just told that some of the applicants may not be available in June for vacation schedules,
okay,
if that's the direction that they go. But also for the record, the issues raised, the commission is in receipt of letters that do acknowledge the issues that came on these late letters from the public dating back to 2006. These are not new issues. The question of the legality of the gate and other things are directly recognized on the first page of the staff report and have been extensively discussed by myself and staff planners of the commission. So they're not new issues. They're issues that have been exhausted over years. And so it's ironic to us that these are being presented as new issues, but nonetheless, we'll go with the sense of the commission.
Thank you. Commissioner Cram?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask staff, was there one letter received on Friday about fishing? Is that the...
No, there's 12 letters in the addendum that were there.
Just regarding the issue of fishing that's never arisen before?
I really can't answer that from firsthand knowledge. Not all of the letters raise the fishing impact. Some of the letters raise the question of the legality of the gate.
Well, no, but I'm asking different, just so we could talk about the fishing issue. I mean, this is a private bridge. If there's been fishing on it, there's a long history there. Has it been raised before?
It has been raised before, and staff looked at it. If you see in the staff report, staff concluded that the quality of the replacement fishing area would be comparable or similar to that being lost. That is what's being challenged by the users of that fishing area.
And what new information has come? There's fishing or more than that?
Their position that those areas are actively used for fishing and that the replacement area would not be comparable.
Okay.
Commissioner Kruer?
Just briefly, I hope we're not going fishing here, because I'm concerned about, you know, always not in my backyard routine. I've certainly talked to the applicant I reported, and I certainly believe in the public access and the fishing should maintain and all that. But I just hope, I haven't seen these letters, that this fishing thing is a real issue and it's not a late hit and making us continue a thing, etc. And I'm beginning to smell a little fish on this one. So,
right. Well, let's call the roll on the motion for postponement. Ask the clerk to please call the roll.
Commissioner Shajian? Shajian, yes. Commissioner Blank?
Aye.
Blank, yes. Commissioner Burke?
Yes.
Burke, yes. Commissioner Clark?
Yes.
Clark, yes. Commissioner Weissel?
Yes.
Weissel, yes. Commissioner Cram?
Yes.
Cram, yes. Commissioner Kruer?
No.
Kruer, no. Commissioner Gurney?
Yes.
Gurney, yes. Commissioner Potter?
No.
Potter, no. Commissioner Schellenberger? Schellenberger, yes. Commissioner Wan?
Yes.
Wan, yes. Chair Neely?
Yes.
Chair Neely, yes. The vote is 10-2.
Okay, thank you. And so we'll hopefully see that item back on the agenda next month. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Lee. Item 15 is the Deputy Director's Report for the San Diego District. This is the list of waivers, non-material amendments and extensions, and emergency permits for the San Diego District. There are three waivers, all of the type of development routinely approved by the Commission. There is one non-material amendment. It's to replace an approved riprap energy dissipator at a storm drain outlet on the beach north of La Jolla Cove with a colored shotcrete sculpted to resemble the quarry stone dissipator that would be replaced. The revised design has been reviewed by the staff engineer, and she concurs it will function in the same manner as the approved rock dissipator. Staff circulated the amendment as non-material, and there is one adverse comment in your packet from a neighbor. They are concerned about the function and design of the dissipator. We don't think that the concerns raise any new information or issues that were not addressed in our engineer's review or any new coastal issues that staff would view as a reason to not approve this as a non-material amendment. There are also two non-material extensions to report, and we've not received any adverse comments on those. So unless there are questions of the commissioners, the staff recommends that the commission concur with the executive director on these matters and approve the deputy director's report.
All right. Thank you, staff. We have no speaker slips on this item. Is there any objection to concurrence with the executive director's report? Seeing none, the commission concurs.
And item 15A, City of Carlsbad, LCP Amendment 1-07B, Plan Development Regulations. This is the completion of the LCP certification process for the City of Carlsbad LCP Amendment to make revisions to the Plan Development Regulations in the Certified Implementation Plan. By its action on April 7th of 2009, the Carlsbad City Council adopted a resolution accepting all the suggested modifications as approved by the Commission in January. And the resolution incorporates those modifications into the city's implementation plan. Pursuant to our regulations, the executive director must determine whether the city's action is legally adequate and report that determination to you. The executive director has reviewed the submittal and determined the city's action is adequate and in conformance with your action on this LCP amendment. Therefore, staff recommends the commission concur with the executive director and effectively certify the City of Carlsbad LCP Amendment 1-07B.
All right, let me ask the commission if there are any objections to concurrence with the executive director on this item. Seeing none, the commission concurs.
And item 15B is City of Encinitas LCP Amendment 1-08, the grading ordinance revisions. This is another executive director certification for revisions to the City of Encinitas's LCP to revise its grading ordinance. And it was approved by the commission with suggested modifications in January of this year. By its action on February 11th and February 25th, the Encinitas City Council adopted two separate resolutions to accept all of the suggested modifications as approved by the Commission in January, and the resolutions incorporate the modifications into the LCP implementation plan. Again, the Executive Director has determined the City's action is legally adequate and in conformance with the Commission's action on this item. Therefore, staff recommends the Commission concur with the Executive Director and effectively certify the City of Encinitas LCP Amendment 1-08.
All right, thank you, staff. Is there any objection to concurrence with the staff recommendation? Seeing none, the Commission concurs.
And item 16, are those items removed from today's regular calendar to the consent calendar by staff? There's one item, 17A, 608, 86, Gauchin, Matsui. There are no letters of opposition, and these conditions are all acceptable to the applicant. Therefore, the staff recommends this item be approved on the consent calendar.
All right. Thank you, staff. We have no speaker slips on this item. What's the pleasure of the commission?
Move the consent calendar.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Waiso and a second by Commissioner Ashajian to approve the consent calendar. Is there any objection to unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the consent calendar is approved.
And could I have the PowerPoint on the next item, please? This is item 17.5, 609-16, EDD, Moss. It's a dispute resolution. This would be resolution of a dispute regarding the commission action in August 2008, approving with conditions a coastal development permit for demolition of an existing blufftop single-family residence and construction of a new 6,755-square-foot single-family residence, including a 2,366-square-foot basement on an ocean-fronting lot on Tierra del Oro Street in Carlsbad. And slide one is taken from the Coastal Records website and shows the subject site. Also proposed as part of the application was construction of an infinity edge pool, spa, and patio seaward of the home and seaward of the bluff edge, which was established at the 36-foot elevation. The dispute relates to the executive director's interpretation of special condition number one approved by the commission, which requires deletion of the pool, spa, patios, and retaining walls on the face of the bluff that involve grading of the bluff. The commission also required deletion of the stairs on top of the riprap revetment from the plans. The deletion of the pool, spa, patios, and retaining walls on the face of the bluff. The condition also requires that any proposed accessory improvements, such as decks, patios, walls, etc., located seaward of the identified bluff edge on the bluff face, shall only be at grade and capable of being removed without significant landform alteration. The applicant has submitted revised plans that eliminate the pool, spa, and patio proposed on the bluff face, but include grading and retaining walls that support a basement with a finished floor elevation at 28 feet that requires a daylight cut into the bluff at that elevation, which is 8 feet below the bluff edge, and two 15-foot long by 16.5-foot high retaining walls on the bluff face. And slide two shows the site plan that's been submitted. The crosshatched area is the extent of grading that would occur seaward of the identified bluff edge. And slide three is a cross-section that, again, shows that the elevation of the basement is the same elevation as the daylight cut that previously supported the pool and spas that were eliminated by special condition number one. The applicant is seeking to retain that cut to support the daylight cut for their basement. The staff has indicated that the grading of the bluff face is not consistent with special condition number one, the intent of which is to limit grading and landform alteration of the bluff face. There is adequate area inland of the bluff edge to site the home in its proposed location with a standard subterranean basement level. And based on the previously submitted plans, there is also enough area for a pool inland of the bluff edge, allowing only the commission-approved at-grade accessory structures on the bluff face. The applicant's position is the condition only addresses accessory structures and that the daylight basement is allowed. And again, staff's position is that it's the grading that is necessary for the daylight basement. That is the same grading the condition requires be eliminated. And the previously approved plan showed the patio and the pool at that elevation, and it was, again, that grading that was required to be removed. For your use, the applicant has requested a transcript, and it's attached to the staff report. The applicant has also augmented his dispute claim to allow a pre-coastal act wooden and unimproved stairway at the across the revetment to remain intact. And staff's position is that is not properly before the commission as a dispute resolution. The applicant is asking the commission to reconsider its previous decision regarding the stairway. There is a process for that. It would be to file a reconsideration request within 30 days if there are grounds, and that did not occur. So we have limited our analysis to just the question of whether or not the proposed grading seaward of the bluff edge is consistent with special condition number one. Staff is recommending the commission concur with the executive director and require that all grading and retaining walls associated with development of the site be located inland of the established bluff edge, consistent with special condition number one. This motion is in the negative. It's on page two. The motion is to reject the executive director's interpretation of special condition number one, and staff is recommending a no vote. And that'll conclude my comments.
Thank you, staff. Let me open the public hearing and look to the commissioners for any ex parte communications, starting on my left. Commissioner Wetzel?
I had a phone call with the applicant, Mr. Moss, on May 1st, and he told me that his redesign meets the intent of the commission based on their original approval. My staff member, Alonzo Gonzalez, also met with Mr. Moss, Steve Moss, on Monday, May 4th. Mr. Moss explained that his project was approved by the Coastal Commission on August with 17 conditions. The grading plans were included in the application and allowed for a sun basement with two bedrooms. Coastal staff is now challenging his grading plan, eliminating the two lower bedrooms. Mr. Moss also stated that he believes that he will not be able to finance the development if the house is changed from the five-bedroom plan to a three-bedroom home. He also contends that the stairs accessing the beach predate the Coastal Act and should not be required to end at the riprap, but this is not as important a point as the grading restriction.
Thank you. Any other ex partes? Commissioner Kruer?
Madam Chair, on 4:30 at 10 o'clock in the morning in La Jolla, I met with Mr. Ehrlich, the lawyer, and Mr. Moss at my office, and we discussed the issue of grading and the reference to daylighting, and we discussed them going westward of the 36-foot contour line. Mr. Moss also asserted that his lenders are balking at the reduction in the five-bedroom house to a three-bedroom if not allowed to grade below the 36-foot contour and thus affects the value. I shared with him that I do not buy this kind of analysis. I said the design of the house should not require daylighting below the 36-foot contour. Also, that the permitted house next door was never appealed, and the Coastal Commission never made a finding that the contour was 20 feet. And there was also, we discussed that there was, just reading the transcript and looking back at this, I told him I thought staff was right on this. This, again, is a dispute resolution. It's not a new amendment or CDP. And so with that was our discussion.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Cram?
Yes. On April 30th at 3 p.m., I met in my office with Ken Ehrlich, the applicant's counsel, and the applicant. We met for approximately 25 minutes to discuss this dispute resolution matter and the issue regarding the house and the daylighting of the first floor. We had a discussion about how minimal the grading is, how the reduction from five bedrooms to three bedrooms has a severe economic impact to them, and the fact that the other homes around there are all similar, have daylighting of their first floors. We also discussed the pre-coastal stairs. I do have a question for staff, which if we could get back to that after.
Okay, we'll put you down on the list. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Do you want to go ahead and ask that now, procedurally?
Yeah, procedurally, I just want to understand the dispute resolution. I wasn't here for the vote on the original vote. Am I supposed to look at this de novo? Are we here to just sort of analyze the equities involved? I mean, what's our position for those of us who were not part of the original hearing?
Council?
This is not de novo. This is based on the action of the commission at the time.
So meaning we're supposed to use the transcript as the basis of our opinion?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We have one speaker, and that's Stephen Moss. Mr. Moss, how much time would you like?
I believe I can do this in probably less than 10 minutes.
Why don't we just give you 10 then?
All right.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, Mr. Chairman, fellow commissioners.
State your name for the record and talk right into the mic.
Yeah. Hello. There we go. Good morning. My name is Stephen Moss, and I'm the owner of the property at 5015 Tierra del Oro. Can we start the PowerPoint, please?
You can bend that microphone if it's
Thank
more
you.
To me. There you go.
I just want to preface this. I'm not used to speaking in public, and also I've never done a PowerPoint presentation, so I consider myself technically challenged, even though it's just pressing one button. In any event, the reason why I'm here is we had a hearing back in August of 2008, and there were 17 conditions attached to my approval, and the commission approved our project with 17 conditions. What's critical and foremost about the approval is that the focus of all of the comments and all of the discussion was whether or not we would be allowed to develop the bluff similar to this property to the south. The property to the south has an identified bluff edge of 20 feet. This is supported by the fact that there have been two CDPs issued piecemeal on that project and all of the geological and technical reports identified the bluff edge at 20 feet. When I came before you in August, my plans entailed a development of a home with a daylight basement, as well as a terraced exterior that consisted of a pool, a spa, and retaining walls similar to the project to the south. As a result of that hearing, it was identified by the comments that were made that the pool, spa, patios, and retaining walls associated with that development would not be allowed. It's my contention that my approval allows for the construction of the home. That would include the design, the building string line, the elevations, as well as the construction of the daylight basement. Do I press this here? Okay. Oop. Sorry about that. I screwed it up already. Going back to the beginning, we had several meetings with staff when the appeal was filed in February of 2008 that led to the 17 conditions. And from the get-go, it was identified that the approval or the recommendation would be that they would approve the daylight basement and the construction of the two bedrooms, but not the pool, the spa, and the patios. I had my consultant, Susan McCabe, and myself meet with Tony Ross and Lee McEckern, and I was told that there's not a problem with the development of my home, but that the total objection would be the pool, the spa, and the retaining walls associated with that. This is an example here that shows that there is actually a lower deck, and this lower deck is the graded portion of my lot. This is located seaward of where the daylight basement is. There was a contention that my lot was similar to the lot to the north, which happens to be an ungraded lot and an undeveloped lot. Everything that we want to do to preserve the integrity of the approved daylight basement is located landward of this already graded lot. This is another picture that shows you that there is the flat pad, which is located, as I say, seaward of the daylight basement. And if you notice in the foreground, there already exists a retaining wall that in some places is 8 foot high that would exceed the height far greater than what I am proposing to do, which is located landward of that location. This is another close-up that gives you that other existing wall that exists on the site. This is a good example to show you that the lot to the north is undeveloped and ungraded. And you can see my home is to the right with the lower pad that is about midway up that photograph. In addition, I might add about the issue about the stairs. Staff contended at the hearing that these stairs were rebuilt over the riprap sometime in the 1980s. And this stair has been in place since the pre-Coastal Act. It is in place, and any of the rock revetment, it essentially abuts it. And to answer the question why I didn't appeal or file an action within 30 days after the hearing, I believed that when I received my approval with my conditions back in August, that I was approved to build the home with the five bedrooms, and I was willing to concede the fact that I would have to remove the portion of the stairs that is allegedly built over the revetment, and that was a concession. I knew I wouldn't be able to have the pool, the spa, the patios, and also I was willing to give up the stairs. The reason why now I would like you to revisit that is just basically because of the fact is that this is a pre-coastal stairway. This is the lot to the north, which shows you that it's undeveloped and not graded similar, or not like my lot itself. We talk about the amount of grading that I would like to do. This is a close. This is a lot section. It is not a 16-foot high retaining wall. It entails, in the upper left-hand corner, it's 14 lineal feet, and seaward of the 36-foot contour, it starts off 7 feet high, and it stair steps down in three areas from 7 feet to 5 feet to 2.5 feet. And the amount of dirt that I'm asking to be allowed to remove here, or to reaffirm what your intentions were, it's 55 yards of dirt. To contrast that, the property to the south that has the approved pool, spa, patios, has excavated nearly 500% more soil, close to 275 yards. The only wall and excavation is relating to my string line and my building footprint, which were approved and were part of the original plans that was clearly stated right from the get-go. In the hearing, in the transcript, just to reiterate the fact that the focus was on whether or not I could build the exterior improvements, this is a quote from Peter Douglas. They are going to have a house. They are going to have their family home. They are going to have their stairway down the face of the bluff. The only thing they won't have is the pool and deck and the spa. Following that, Commissioner Kruger added, this person will have a very nice house, and it isn't necessary to build a pool and spa going down the face of the bluff. It's essentially this, is that my wife and I have been married almost for 30 years. We're very hardworking people. She's the daughter of a coal miner from England. I'm a contractor, and we've worked very hard to be able to be fortunate enough to afford this property. Our design includes two bedrooms in the daylight basement. An inability to create the five bedrooms will create an extraordinary hardship for us. We have family that visits us from overseas, and there just frankly won't be enough room. I have two adult grown children who someday hopefully will be having grandchildren. We look at this as an opportunity for us to realize our dream. And it's just shocking that I'm at this point where what was approved is now being disapproved by staff. There was some contention that the property to the south was not noticed to the commission as far as, may I have a few more minutes, please?
You can have one more to wrap
okay.
it up.
Can I go back to the PowerPoint? This is actually a notification of appeal that was sent to the coastal. Now, it wasn't appealed to the commission, but they were notified of that fact that this development was going to be occurring. This is a copy from my lender. They're basically saying that they will not fund a three-bedroom home. And with respect to Commissioner Kruger's comments, sure, a basement can still be built, but it won't have the bedrooms. I can't create bedrooms if I'm only allowed to create essentially a recreational room that will allow me a window that's only 14 inches high in the basement. It's not a legal exit, and this has just been something that, you know, I'm faced with a catastrophic situation. This is the pre-coastal picture of the stairs that were existing. It's a faint picture, but it's been acknowledged that the stairs are there. And then here's the stairs there. I guess I can, in conclusion, say is that I would like an opportunity for a fair shake, that there are other properties in the area that have these improvements, And I would just like you to reaffirm the approval that was granted for the home itself. I've eliminated everything else.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Let's go back to staff for comments.
Madam Chair, before I turn it back to Sherilyn, let me again remind the commission that the issue before you is not the personal situation of the applicant, but rather the land use question. Is the land use that's being proposed or the use of the land appropriate? The commission has dealt with many, many situations in the past where personal stories about the applicant's needs are presented to you, but they're not relevant to the application of the law to the facts. So it's the land use question that you have to deal with. With that, Sherilyn.
Thank you, Peter. I'd also like to remind the commission that the review of this development in light of the development that the commission had approved to the north and the south, the legality of the stairway portion, and those and the location of the bluff edge, those were thoroughly reviewed by the commission in its action on this item, and that's not the question that's before you today. Regarding the decision to the north, though, that was a decision on the permit. The applicant's name was Riley. That home is not yet built, and we are working with the applicant or the property owner on revised plans for that project, and we have indicated to them that a daylight basement in that situation would not be consistent with the commission's action on that site. Our staff engineer has reviewed this and indicated that the construction of the home in this location that's proposed by the applicant is possible. They could still have a subterranean basement in this location with a solid wall up to the elevation of 36. The finished floor of the first floor is not is at elevation 39, so it would also be possible to have some windows on the seaward side of that basement. So we're not precluding his ability to construct a basement or put two additional bedrooms in that basement. It is possible to construct a five-bedroom house on the site in accordance with the commission action. The question that's before you is whether or not the removal of the daylight cut that is now supporting a basement was the type of grading that the commission action intended to be removed from the bluff face. And we recommend that you find that the daylight cut is not consistent with special condition number one.
All right, let me bring it back to the commission. Commissioner Kruer?
Madam Chair, I move that the commission reject the executive director's interpretation of special condition number one of the CDP A6-C11-08-028 and recommend a no vote.
Second. We have a motion by Commissioner Kruer and a second by Commissioner Wan. Passage or failure of the motion will result in the commission upholding the executive director's determination. Would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner
Yes,
Kruer?
Briefly. I believe that this, before us today is not a permit amendment where we change what previous action we do, but this is a dispute resolution. There's no question in my mind there was the discussion was about grading and the contour, and we talked about the 20-foot. We talked about the Riley House. Deputy Director Saab mentioned the house to the north, the Riley House, that we did follow the 36-foot contour. Director Douglas was very specific about the building down the bluff face and the precedent, bad precedents that would cause, et cetera, and about the mistake that happened on the city of Carlsbad allowing an administrative permit on the house down to the south, and that we just didn't catch it, but we would have, if we did catch it, we would have taken action and would have appealed it or taken it on. But that was local government let that one slip through and we missed it. But the problem here is, other than this is the wrong form, this is about a dispute resolution, not a permit amendment. There's several things that the applicant has said that I have grave concern with. First of all, they're going to be able to build a beautiful family house here, and whether it's five bedrooms or three bedrooms, shouldn't be a problem with the lender. The lender looks at square footage, views, the quality of the home, and everything else. I've never seen anything that I've ever been involved in. You get more value for more bedrooms. You're going to have the same square footage. You can still build a basement down there, and no one's stopping you under the existing approval. And also the precedence it would set by when we start talking about using daylighting, which is usually used for geological issues of where you have to take out soil because of bad soil, level it out and everything else, and use that as an issue to be able to start grading westward of a contour line on the bluff face top is a terrible precedence for this commission to establish in the issue of daylighting. I think staff has done a very good job analyzing this, and I would recommend everyone support the recommendation per staff.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Wan?
Yes, I'm going to second what Commissioner Crewe has said, maybe just say a few more things. The applicant is attempting to use this process to get a new hearing, and that's not what this process is all about. At this hearing, which is the original hearing, which we're now looking at, and this is dispute resolution, it's what did we do at that hearing, we had a lot of discussion about the bluff edge. The applicant made the contentions then about the 20-foot versus the 36-foot contour. This commission specifically agreed with its geologist and not with the applicant's geologists and contentions. And we specifically discussed the fact that we did not want grading on that bluff face, which is the reason why we removed those accessory structures. And so this, the commission at the time said that there could be a home, and there still can be a home there, but we were very specific, and it is clear that the staff is right. Relative to what was discussed at that hearing, this commission did not approve the grading and did not approve daylighting. And as I said, if you look at the discussion in the transcript, it's pretty clear that we discussed about the grading on the face of the bluff, and we didn't want it.
All right, Commissioner Cram? Could you turn your mic on?
I hear Commissioner Wan, and I appreciate that. I just look at the transcript, and a very narrow reading of the transcript seems to be neutral on this issue. And if you were to just take the words, they're going to have their stairway, and the only thing they won't have is the pool and the deck, I don't understand how you can limit the applicant in terms of this extra 75 yards of grading. I think it's a de minimis request. It doesn't move the house any closer to the water. And you have a situation where seaward of that, you have vast improvements. You have this huge concrete deck there that's seaward of the house. I think the photos supported it being reasonable, but as you said, I wasn't there. And so, but I think this is a minimal request to change.
Okay, anyone else from the commission for comments? We have a motion by Commissioner Crewe, a second by Commissioner Wan. Failure of the motion will result in the commission upholding the executive director's determination. Do we need a roll call vote on this item? Let's go ahead and have a roll call vote. And the maker and seconder are recommending a no vote.
Commissioner Blank.
No.
Blank, no. Commissioner Burke.
No.
Burke, no. Commissioner Clark.
No.
Clark, no. Commissioner Wiesel.
No.
Wiesel, no. Commissioner Cram.
Yes.
Cram, yes. Commissioner Crewer.
No.
Crewer, no. Commissioner Gurney.
No.
Gurney, no. Commissioner Potter.
No.
Potter, no. Commissioner Schellenberger.
No.
Schellenberger, no. Commissioner Wan.
No.
Wan, no. Commissioner Ashajian.
Yes.
Ashajian, yes. Chair Neely.
No.
Chair Neely, no. The vote is 2-10.
Thank you. The commission upholds the executive director's determination and adopts the findings recommended by the staff.
Madam Chair, that brings us to the enforcement report. Let me turn it over to Ms. Hagee and Mr. McClendon.
Who knows?
Commissioners, we're lucky enough, because we're in San Francisco and we don't have to pay for travel, to have some enforcement staff here. And on my behalf, Aaron McClendon and Nancy Cave will be doing this report this morning.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And if I could get the PowerPoint. Thanks.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Today's item 18 is the enforcement report for the May 2008 hearing. First, I'd like to report on the status of cases in which we have recorded notices of violation under 308.12 of the Coastal Act. As you may remember, this is a mechanism provided for in the Coastal Act, which is intended in large part to put any potential innocent purchasers on notice of the violation and avoid any unnecessary problems. These NOVAs are sometimes the result of formal hearings before the Commission and are sometimes the result of negotiated resolution. In both cases, pursuant to Section 308.12i, we review them for case progress to see if the violation is still in place and to check on progress of case resolution. I'm going to briefly summarize the status of these in this review. For the 10 recorded NOVAs I report on today, all but one still have all or part of the violation in place. In one of these, the unpermitted development has been removed, and we are working with respondents to receive the fees for the recording of the rescission. In four other cases, a resolution is underway or currently being actively worked on. In the other five cases, the violations are not resolved, and the NOVA is therefore needed for all of these cases. And the next slide. Thanks. Ms. Kay will report on a case involving public access in the Pismo Beach area.
Thank you, Commissioners. Commission staff is very, very pleased to announce the reopening of a blocked vertical access path in Pismo Beach, San Luis Obispo County. In 2004, Commission enforcement staff investigated the unpermitted construction of two gates that blocked a vertical access path that had been historically used by the public. Prior to the unpermitted gate construction, the public had continuously used the path for over 50 years. The vertical access path leads to blufftop access trails and provides a link to another vertical path leading to the beach below. Commission enforcement staff opened an investigation into the unpermitted construction of the two gates and also conducted an analysis of potential historic public usage of the path on behalf of the Commission's access program. A community group, SOAP, which stands for Save Our Access Path, formed and filed a court action to quiet title to the path. On appeal from a local government decision, the Commission heard and denied a permit application to authorize, after the fact, the placement of one of the gates. Commission, the property owner has challenged the Commission's denial in court. However, in late 2008, SOAP won at the trial court on the issue of title to the path. In March 2009, SOAP and the property owners reached a settlement which allowed the path to be improved and reopened to public use. The reopening took place on March 29, 2008. Slide number three. Okay. Go back to the slide before this, please.
I don't know how to do that.
Okay, we
How do you go back on this, Steve?
No, you're going forward. There we go. This is an aerial photo from Coastal Records showing how the vertical path, the existing one, was blocked by gates installed at the street entrance as well as on the bluff entrance. As the public exits from the path onto the bluff, existing bluff trails lead to a public park as well as to the vertical access path to the beach below. The area is heavily used by the public and leads to a popular surf location. Slide number four. This photo is a view from the street towards the accessway that shows the unpermitted gate blocking the public access. This is actually right when it's first starting to be blocked, before it was actually constructed. Slide number five. This shows the vertical path where it exited onto the bluff and shows how the property owner initially blocked the public from coming from that bluff back to the street exit. Slide number six. This is a photo we took on March 29, 2008 at the public gathering and celebration as the path is reopened to public use. Slide number seven. While dark, this photo shows some of the public at the bluff and the vertical path during the reopening ceremony. The path has been improved so that disabled members of the public can now get to the bluff viewing area, as well as other members of the public wishing to continue on to the existing dirt trails leading to the public park up coast and the beach below. Slide number 8. Finally, slide number 8 demonstrates the importance of this public path as it leads to a magnificent public viewing area. This case represents the combined efforts of the Commission's enforcement staff, permitting staff, and access program staff working in collaboration, and the effectiveness of the efforts of the public to regain usage of a path used by them for over 50 years. And that concludes my report on Yando.
Thank you. And the next case involves a violation in the Eureka area. Commission staff is also pleased to announce the successful resolution of a longstanding Coastal Act violation in the Eureka portion of Humboldt County. Resolution of this violation was achieved through cooperation between the Commission's enforcement staff, the Commission's North Coast Permit staff, and the staff of the City of Eureka Planning Department. And we're very pleased to work with the Planning Department there and all their help that they did. As you may recall, in October 2007, the Commission issued a consent cease and desist order to address unpermitted development on what was known as the Old Dog Pound site, immediately adjacent to the Elk River Wildlife Area. This slide shows a newer, unpermitted section of wall on the right with the older original wall on the left and unpermitted crushed wall debris in the foreground. The wall is extended beyond the footprint of a demolished pre-coastal building and into a wetland buffer area. Slide number 11 shows unpermitted debris at the site within the wetland buffer area. Slide number 12, this photo shows additional unpermitted debris on the site, as you can see in the background of that slide. After this is also some additional debris that was left over on the site. After a significant effort by staff to compel respondent to comply with the consent order, a portion of the unpermitted walls and debris were removed in 2008. However, some of the unpermitted development remained in violation of the consent order. In addition, the penalty of money that respondent agreed to in the settlement was never submitted. Because respondent had agreed to resolve the violation through a consent order and agreed to pay stipulated penalties for violating the terms of that order, such penalties were accruing for the violations of the order, and this tool motivated respondent to comply with the order. Enforcement staff worked to get compliance with the order and was eventually able to achieve this. This photo shows some of the debris located, loaded onto a flatbed truck waiting to be hauled to an offsite area. Respondent complied with the terms of the order and also paid an additional $13,000 in stipulated penalties for violating the terms of the order. This photo shows the site after demolition and cleanup being taken place. Finally, we wanted to update you on the progress of a restoration that we were very excited about.
Could I just ask a quick question about the violation in Eureka? So he has complied now with the consent order. And do we know where he was going to haul this material?
We do. He did haul it to an approved site. I believe Bob actually observed and monitored the whole removal, and we did confirm with the city that it is an approved site.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. As you may recall, the Commission issued a consent cease and desist and restoration order to address the unpermitted grading of an environmentally sensitive habitat area in the Newport Beach area. A remnant dune system is located on the north and south sides of the Santa Ana River. In this photo, you can see the dunes adjacent to six properties just below the Santa Ana River. This is a close-up of that area. As you can see, this remnant dune system directly in front of these six properties located on the City of Newport Beach property. Unfortunately, the five of the property owners went out with heavy equipment and graded the dunes flat to what appears to be increase their views of the ocean. Here's another picture of the unpermitted development. And as we reported to you in June of 2008, the respondents began restoration of the site, complying with the order, In addition, they paid a penalty of $225,000, which we have received the full amount of. A portion of that, we agreed to pay the City of Newport Beach for their efforts in resolving this violation. And this is a more recent photo. This photo is of the foredune area this past winter after a recent rain. And slide 24, another photo from this past winter. As you can see, the restoration is just amazing out there. And while this photo doesn't necessarily show that much, I will note that all that was done here was just planting dune vegetation. This dune has grown significantly and naturally. As the dunes will grow, so will these dune plant species. This is another photograph of the foredune area a few months ago. As you can see, dunes are starting to accumulate. This is an overview of the front dune area. Here you can see how critical it is to demarcate using the rope and bollards and educational signs to keep the people out. Also, it kept out dogs and other animals that were being walked by people visiting this beach. Slide 28, another picture of the foredune area with dune vegetation growing. Now we're in the transitional zone into the top of the foredune area. This was taken this spring and shows the dune plants beginning to flower. This is a photo of the transition area into the back dunes. All these zones play a critical part in the formation and viability of the dune systems. Again, you can see this is just about a month ago, this spring, showing the flowering of the dune plants. Here's the transitional area looking down into the back dune area. Again, all these native dune plant species are thriving. Here's another photo showing the back dune area. As you can see, the plants are flowering, attracting butterflies, bees, and other pollinators. The seeds from these plants will restore the seed stocks that has been depleted from this area due to the heavily invasive ice plant that has taken over this remnant dune system. The Los Cerritos Wetland Stewards have been doing a tremendous job out here. Again, this is the back dune area, flowering dune plants. Prior to the unpermitted development, the dune system was almost completely covered by ice plant. And as you can see, this is just an amazing natural dune system now. The Los Cerritos Wetland Stewards, this was the group that was hired by the respondents to do the restoration, have used volunteers to do the weeding on the site. These volunteers are predominantly middle school, high school, and university kids. In addition to the volunteer work, they get educated in dune ecology and restoration. So it's not only getting the restoration, but also tremendous educational opportunity. Another photograph of the volunteers doing some weeding on the back dune area. The next several slides are just close-up photos of the restoration area. I'm just going to quickly flip through them. The flowering dune plants. And that's the last photo of the dune restoration. Again, we're incredibly pleased with the restoration that's gone out here. It's just been a tremendous effort by the organization and working with respondents to ensure that the efforts will continue. And finally, we'd like to introduce one of our summer interns that started this week, Megan Herzog. Raise your hand, please, or stand up. She'll be joining us for 10 weeks this summer to intern for the enforcement program. She's just finished her first year at Stanford Law School and is a member editor of both the Stanford Law Journal and the Stanford Journal of International Law. After her 10 weeks with us, she's going off to Nepal. to work on international water law issues. So she's incredibly talented. We're extremely fortunate to have her with us for the summer.
Well, thank you. Congratulations, Megan. We're glad to have you with us.
And a graduate of Commissioner Schallenberger's alma mater.
So, great.
Looked like that Newport violation really had some positive consequences. A case where you encourage a violation.
That concludes the enforcement report, and I'm available for questions if you have any.
All right, thank you. Any questions from commissioners? All right, seeing none, thank you. That was a great update. We'll move to the North Coast.
Good morning, commissioners. Before I address the administrative items in the pink addendum, I just wanted to note a couple of major Caltrans highway projects that the commission has reviewed in the last couple of years are reaching certain milestones. On Monday of last week, I attended a groundbreaking ceremony for the Alton Interchange project at the intersection of Highway 101 and Highway 36 south of Ferndale. And some of you may remember the field trip that we took a couple of summers ago to look at this site. And one of the more significant aspects of the project is the agricultural mitigation that's being provided for the loss of approximately 40 acres of agricultural lands to accommodate the interchange. Caltrans, you may remember, agreed to donate $2 million for the College of the Redwoods Agricultural Program, which is the local junior college. And the money will endow a professorship for the Shively Farm, which is a sustainable organic farm, and allow that farm to continue, and will also allow the agricultural program to continue by providing needed infrastructure. We feel that was a tremendous result in that it not only saved the 38-acre Shively Farm, but also will allow for the training of agriculturalists to promote sustainable organic farming in the area and the continuation of agriculture in general. And then after I leave this meeting, I'll be heading north up to Mendocino County, and there's a ribbon-cutting ceremony for the 10-mile river bridge, which was approved 2 years ago. And one of the significant aspects of that project was the inclusion of a separated walkway on the ocean side of the quarter-mile-long bridge. And it also involves a innovative railing design that your subcommittee on bridge railings worked long and hard with the Caltrans engineers to develop, and the railing incorporates an architecturally pleasing arched motif atop a railing that is largely transparent to allow views but still meets the safety standards required by Caltrans. So I'm looking forward to seeing that and seeing how it came out. The pink addendum.
I think on that one, again, really thank the commissioners who served on that subcommittee. But it also is, again, an example of how the commission is told that something can't be done, and then, lo and behold, given the proper incentive, indeed it can. And it's a good outcome. You're going to be very pleased when you get a chance to cross it.
The pink addendum that we distributed this morning has one emergency permit, a permit waiver, and an immaterial amendment. The emergency permit was granted to the city of Eureka to remove a 4-inch diameter pipe underneath a wharf along the Eureka waterfront, where the pipe had previously been used to transfer waste oil from vessels to a shoreside disposal facility. The pipe had become severely deteriorated, and there was great risk that it would spring leaks and discharge remnant oil sludge into the bay. So the permit was issued to the city. They're using a small watercraft and using hand tools, and they've got appropriate spill kits of it, at the site, and they're retaining all of the oil and disposing of it properly. We just bring that to your attention. There's no action required on that item. With regard to the permit waiver, we're not aware of any controversy. However, for the immaterial permit amendment, which is also in the pink addendum, we did receive a letter which is provided in the green addendum from Julie Varan of Wallala. The permit amendment involves some minor architectural changes to a house that was approved 4 or 5 years ago to Brian and Della Zita to construct a 2,390 square foot house with a detached garage and guest cottage. The amendment would authorize minor architectural changes, mainly to accommodate solar panels on a portion of the roof, and it would also slightly move the structure 3 to 5 feet to build on a more level portion of the site without changing the size of the house. It also includes adding a underground rainwater tank. The objection letter raises three main concerns. Ms. Varan believes that the botanical survey performed the original project is too old to rely on for the review of the amendment. The permit was approved with conditions requiring that the development be located more than 50 feet away from a population of coastal morning glory plants, which is a rare plant. Secondly, Ms. Varan indicates that there has been some tree blowdown on the site, which has opened up views of the guest cottage, which has since been constructed from Highway 1. And then Ms. Varan indicates that she believes staff should thoroughly review the permit for condition compliance. We don't believe that any of these concerns changes our determination that the amendment should be immaterial. With regard to the biological survey, we note that the approved location is more than 50 feet away from the population that was identified 5 years ago. The amendment would move the house only 3 to 5 feet. The area that is being affected by or being covered by moving it that small amount is largely loose gravel associated with the driveway. And the applicant did provide us with a photograph of that area. If you'd like to look at it, I could distribute it later. But there are no indications to us that this minor shift is going to in any way affect populations of rare plants. With regard to the tree blowdown, it is true you can see the garage structure more from Highway 1, but it's in an area where the view is from a road cut, and the view from the highway looks upward towards the site. You do not have a view of the ocean at all, and the blowdown was a natural occurrence. The amendment will actually reduce the whatever visual impact there is of the project by reducing the height of the house structure. And finally, we have carefully reviewed the permit conditions, and we visited the site for the amendment, and we see no indication of any condition compliance problem. Your regulations require, in situations like this where we have received a letter of objection, to report this to you and offer our opinion whether it changes our determination if it's immaterial. As I've said, we don't think it does. So at this time, Madam Chair, after you give the Commission the opportunity to address any ex parte communications, we'd ask through the Chair if there are any Commissioners that object to processing both this immaterial amendment and the waiver as administrative items using the determinations in our notices.
All right. Thank you, staff. We do have one question from Commissioner Wong.
Just a quick question. You addressed most of the issues relative to the immaterial amendment on the Zeta House. When you said that it was being moved 3 to 5 feet and it was into an area of gravel, you didn't say whether or not that reduces that 50 foot. In other words, it still stays 50 feet from the morning glories?
That's correct. It's kind of in a lateral direction that doesn't
Thank
move
you.
It closer or farther away.
All right. Are there any ex parte communications from the commission? Seeing none, then is there any objection to concurrence with the director's determination? And seeing none, these are the commission concurs.
There are no items that have been moved to consent, so that brings us to item 21A, which is application 1-05-60, which is an application of Dennis and Susan Del Biagio to convert a rural residence in an area about a mile north of Ferndale near the Salt River, convert it from a residence to a construction contractor's office and yard.
And we have no speaker slips on this item.
Okay. There is one letter that I should point out that's also contained in the green addendum from some of the neighbors who raise concerns about the flooding issues there and also assert that the contractor's yard would not be compatible with the character of their neighborhood. Staff is recommending that the commission approve the project with conditions. The principal issue, as we saw it, was the risk to life and property in flood hazard. The site is just south of the Salt River, which is a tributary to the Eel, and there is flooding that occurs in that area historically. And the site is designated on the Federal Insurance Administration maps as both being within a flood hazard area and a floodway, which raises two kinds of risks. There's the hazard of inundation, and then by developing within a floodway, there's the risk that the development would displace the capacity of the floodway to carry floodwaters away, thereby spreading the floodwater damage to other locations. Now, to minimize those hazards, there are two things that the project does and which are incorporated into the conditions. One is to require that the new structures, the base floor of the structures, be located above the base flood elevation. And there are conditions, condition number three, which requires final plans to be submitted that shows that the floor elevation is at that elevation as certified by an engineer. We have also included conditions. One of the facilities proposed is a pole barn structure, which basically is a roof covering without walls or a floor. And as a contractor, the applicant wanted to be able to store certain construction materials, including wood. And we have recommended a condition that would require that any wood storage, since it's buoyant and obviously can become a projectile if carried away in floodwaters, be also stored above the base flood elevation level. And so there's plan requirements for storage racks that incorporate that and also incorporate engineering to ensure that they are strong enough and anchored to avoid being carried away by the floodwaters. Then the second risk with regard to displacing the capacity of the floodway, the project does include excavating an area adjacent to the drainage swale that would make up for the loss of volume that would be displaced by the structures. And so we believe that with those measures, the project does minimize risk of flood hazard. With regard to the concerns in the letter, I'll just note that there are conditions requiring that landscaping and fencing that's been installed be maintained, and we think with the landscaping and fencing and the fact that it's in an area where there are other buildings of similar form, albeit for different uses, that the project will not be incompatible with the character of the area, which is the standard under your visual policy of the Coastal Act. And so one last thing before I close on this, I did need to make one change. In speaking with the applicant, Dennis Del Biagio, one of the structures that he's building is an addition to the existing house. And the existing house is below the base flood elevation level, and we've required that the addition be built above the level. He indicated concerns about how that would work with the design of the structure and the cost. An alternate approach to protecting a structure from flood hazards that is recognized by FEMA and the local ordinance is to basically floodproof a structure. So if it's built below the base flood elevation, if you create impermeable walls that will not allow the water to come in and otherwise seal it off, that is an acceptable way to keep the floodwaters from inundating. So we have modified condition number 3B to allow for that option. The final plans that need to be submitted could provide either for floodproofing that addition or allowing the structure to have the floor level brought up a foot above the base flood. And so with that modification, we recommend that you adopt the written staff recommendation, and the motion is found on page 3. Thank you.
There it is. Okay, thank you. All right, let me first go to the commissioners. See, we have no speakers on this item. Any ex parte communications? Seeing none, Commissioner Ashajian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the commission approve coastal development permit number 105060 pursuant to the staff recommendation. Recommend a yes vote.
We have a motion by Commissioner Ashajian, a second by Commissioner Potter. Passage of the motion will result in approval of the permit as conditioned and adoption of the findings in the staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, ma'am. I believe the staff did a great job.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Potter. All right. We have one comment from Commissioner Wan.
I just have a couple of questions of staff. The zoning here is commercial?
It's commercial general, yes.
Okay. And are there other commercial structures in the area, or are they just residential?
They're mainly residential in the immediate vicinity, but about a quarter mile away is a little community of Arlinda Corners, which does have some commercial development there.
So in the immediate area, it's residential. Have you considered the, not the view, but the impacts that the were raised in the letter about noise and the various things that go on with a commercial facility and what is effectively a residential area?
Yeah, and it is, I neglected to mention, of course, that it's agricultural as well. There's lots of pasture land around it and agricultural barns. But the county did approve a use permit for this structure several years ago. Under the Coastal Act, the handle that the commission has is with regard to visual impacts, and there is the requirement that it be visible, be compatible with the character of the area. There's not anything that would allow the commission to really delve directly into the noise issues. The county does have some limitations in their use permit on hours of operation, so that may help.
All right, thank you. Is there any objection to unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the commission hereby approves the coastal development permit. Thank you.
That brings us to item 21B, which appears on the addendum. Which is the permit application of Richard and Yvette Schnabelt for after-the-fact authorization for the construction of a 2,400-square-foot, 20-foot-high fish processing plant or warehouse that produces fish byproduct. It's located along the in Noyo Harbor, along the north bank of the river in the Fort Bragg area of Mendocino County. The staff, I should note that the applicant's representative, Norm Duvall, we've distributed for him a letter commenting on the item. The staff is recommending that the commission approve the permit with conditions. The site is in the midst of the commercial fishing and fish processing, boating facilities, and industrial use on the Noyo Harbor. In 1997, the commission actually approved a permit for construction of the same building. The plant was proposed to be built to replace another plant that had been destroyed by a fire on an adjacent property. When the commission approved the permit, it approved it with a special condition requiring that certain engineering recommendations of the engineer be followed and incorporated into the final plans and submitted for commission review, staff review, and approval. The project, though, the plans were not submitted prior to construction of the building, and as the condition was a prior-to-issuance condition, the permit was never actually issued before the building was built. Subsequently, the standard condition that indicates that permits will expire within 2 years of the commission's action kicked in, and the permit expired. The fact that the permit had expired, even though the building had been built, didn't come to our attention until last year when a representative of the local district attorney's office was inquiring about the status of coastal permits as they were looking at unrelated potential violations of codes not involving the Coastal Act. As we reviewed the file, we learned about the fact that the permit was never issued, contacted the applicant. The applicant submitted as-built plans showing that the structure conformed to what had been built before, and has submitted an application that's before you now for consideration. We don't think that the project raises any issues. The as-built plans incorporated the design recommendations of the engineer, and so we believe that the project conforms with Coastal Act requirements, and we're recommending that you approve the permit with the conditions in the staff recommendation. Now, there's a second aspect of this. The applicants have asked for the commission to reduce the fee for this application. The application fee, as calculated using your regulations, is substantial. The fee for this kind of structure is based either on the square footage of the building or the total project cost. The regulations say that the staff must charge the higher of the two ways of calculating the fee. Based on the cost, the fee would be $3,000, but based on the square footage, it's $10,000. And then the regs also require that in a case where you have an after-the-fact situation, the commission is required to charge an additional fee in the amount of either two times the regular fee or five times the regular fee. We looked at that and, given the circumstances, felt that the minimum increase was appropriate, but that still meant that the staff had to charge $20,000 for the application fee. So in talking with the applicant, we discussed this process where the commission can consider reductions of the fee, and they've requested that. The regulations do provide that the commission is free to reduce or waive an application fee and is not subject to the same requirements that's affecting staff in determining the initial charge of what the fee is. We support the reduction of the fee, although there's a disagreement as to how much to reduce the fee. We believe the appropriate fee would be $10,000, which is the fee that would be applied for anybody else that we're applying today for the same structure. The applicants are requesting that the fee be reduced to $3,000, which, as I said, is the lower way of calculating the fee, although the regs suggest that you should go with the higher fee of $10,000 in terms of the staff determining what to charge. There's also a motion in the staff recommendation on the fee reduction issue, and both motions are found on pages 4 and 5, and that concludes my report.
All right, thank you, staff. Let me first look to see if there are any ex parte communications with commissioners. Any on my left? Any on the right? All right, then we'll go ahead and take testimony. We have three public speakers, and the first is Norm Duvall, who's the agent. How much time do you collectively want?
Maybe 5 minutes, six.
Oh, why don't we give you 10 just to be on the safe side?
Thank you. That's okay. Very relaxing. And I've given your staff a CD with some of the photographs of the site. I'm very pleased to put those up there. Madam Chair and members, my name is Norman Duvall of Norman Duvall & Associates. And I address you today on behalf of Richard and Yvette Schnaubelt and their reapplication for a fisheries byproduct plant on the Noyo River, Fort Bragg, Mendocino County. Rick Schnaubelt and his son John are here this afternoon and available to answer any of your questions and add any information I might leave out. We wish to express our appreciation for the work done by your staff in assisting myself and Amy Nguyen of Amy Nguyen Coastal Development Permits in completing this reapplication so rapidly. We endorse and support the staff recommendations, conditions, and motions, with the exception of Motion 1B on pages 4 and 5. The Schnaubelts were notified in 2008 that their application for the fishery reduction plant, while approved in 1997 by the County and Coastal Commission, had not been properly recorded by their then agent. Our efforts to reach their former agent have been futile, and while he is no longer on the Mendocino coast, his former associates have no knowledge of the whereabouts of the client file. Notice of the violation, combined with the disappearance of their former agent and his files, left the Schnaubelts in a weakened position with regard to records management. As the records will show, the Schnaubelts have responded timely and with sincere effort to resolve the situation, which they entrusted to their former agent, one with a substantial reputation for competent representation for those who he represented. It is significant to note that the County Planning Department, a senior planner no less, signed off on the Schnaubelts building permit application, which was issued in 1998, after determining, though incorrectly, that a CDP had been issued for the project. Obtaining the proper planning permit for this project was particularly complicated, as the applicants had to obtain two levels of local coastal planning approval, the LCP consistency review and the use permit, along with the Coastal Commission approval in between. In addition, there was a fast-track process to rebuild the fish processing plant after their original plant was destroyed by fire. The applicants, their agent, and various consultants crossed all the T's and dotted the I's prior to obtaining their building permits, with the sole exception of satisfying the one special condition required prior to issue of the CDP. It should be known that this special condition was satisfied as a requirement of for obtaining their building permit. Somehow, and we don't truly know how, a letter may have been sent to the Coastal Commission and not received. The Coastal Commission staff was never notified of the applicant's satisfaction of the condition, and subsequently the CDP was never issued. This item slipped through the cracks, not only by the applicant and their agent of the time, but also by the county's planning department. Therefore, it is reasonable to understand that with all the best efforts made to comply with the requirements of the CDP, that the special conditions were in fact satisfied in order to procure the building permit, and that, but for the notification to the Coastal Commission, all the elements of the approved permit were complied with in a timely manner. The Schnaubelts appreciate staff recommendation that the $20,000 reapplication fee be reduced to $10,000. The applicant was informed that the after-the-fact filing fee would be $3,000 based on the construction cost of 1997 at the time of construction, and a check for that amount was included with our reapplication. We now see the $7,000 above the already paid amount as a fine rather than a fee. On behalf of the Schnaubelts, we ask that Motion 1B be modified to read that the Commission move for a reduction to the $3,000 level. The rationale is that Sections 13055D does not take into consideration that an application fee of a warehouse-type structure in comparison to a home, commercial business, or bed and breakfast of similar square footage can have considerably less required staff time, or take into consideration that such a warehouse structure can be relatively easily dismantled and moved to another location. Our photos of the interior, if I can have the next slide, please, clearly indicate the simplicity of the structure and that aside from its roof, walls, and restroom, it is used only for storage and rendering tanks, all of which are removable. The building itself is little more than a shell. It has no partitions or fittings, with the exception of a sump for the collection of fishery byproduct and cleaning in a worker's bathroom. The applicant believes that the commission can make a finding that the simplicity of the building and that the cost of construction provide adequate reason to make an exception to Section 1305A5. Next slide, please. And the next slide, please. That's looking westerly. The river is between the CPAL building and the west side of the river. Next slide. Oh, and next slide. These are other problems that are in NOYO. Enforcement is welcome. And next slide. This was a workable slipway by Westfall Marine. Next slide. I'm trying to get to the inside of the building, please. I'm sorry. Keep going. Next slide. I don't know how this happened. We've maybe missed some. Next slide. Okay. These are shots of the inside of the building showing that it's primary storage, rendering plant, and all of which is either brought in on, by forklift on pallets and is easily removable. Relative to Section 13055D, we again state that the Schnaubelts entrusted an individual who put himself forward in the market as a professional and were completely unknowing that the permit process had not been completed. We are pleased to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And let me just check to see if Mr. Rick Schnaubelt or John Schnaubelt want to add anything, or are you happy to just answer questions if the commissioners have any? Did you want to add anything? Okay, all right, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go back to staff.
Well, Madam Chair, it's within your discretion as to what you want to do relative to the reduction of the fee. As Bob indicated, our hands are tied in terms of what we can recommend. But one of the reasons that we're recommending that you reduce the fee to $10,000 and not $3,000 is because one of the permit conditions required that prior to the issuance of the permit, they agreed to comply with the engineer's recommendations. And apparently that didn't occur until after we were aware that they had never come in to have the permit issued. So that's why we decided to stick with a $10,000 recommendation. But it's really up to you as to what you think is appropriate.
All right.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Kruer.
I would suggest that we reduce it to the, looking at the building, the structure, and listen to the testimony this morning, to $3,000.
So that would be... we have two motions to do, and they're on pages 4 and 5. So on in terms of the motion on page 5, we would change the amount. But I think we'd have to do that through an action of the commission. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, you would. My suggestion is you deal with the permit application first
Let's start with the motion on page 4 then.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Shahjian.
I move that the commissioner approve coastal development permit number 109010 pursuant to the staff recommendation. Recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Shahjian and a second by Commissioner Hueso. The maker and seconder are recommending a yes vote. Passage of the motion will result in the approval of the permit as condition and adoption of the findings in the staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, ma'am.
Commissioner Hueso?
No.
Okay. Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the commission hereby approves the coastal development permit. And then for the second motion?
I move that the commission direct the executive director to reduce the permit application fee for coastal development permit number 109010 from $20,000 to $3,000. Recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Shahjian and a second by Commissioner Hueso. The maker and seconder are recommending a yes vote, and approval of the motion will result in the permit application being reduced to $3,000. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Yes, ma'am. Having listened to staff's reporting and the applicant's report, I find that the applicant themselves aren't the guilty party in this, and it's a fee rather than a fine. If they're not the guilty party, they need not to be fined. And having heard also from staff that the cost is at $3,000, we need not to take any less than that amount. I find it to be suitable and fair to all concerned that it be based on the cost. It's $3,000.
All right, Commissioner Hueso?
No, I concur with Commissioner Shahjian.
Any other comments?
Yeah.
Commissioner Schallenberger?
A question of staff. I'm just concerned about precedent here, and that if we do decide to lower the fee, that it's for a very clear and defensible reason, and that we're not opening the door for many people to come in and say we'd like to have the commission reduce our fee. It's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the regulations require that the fee be based either on the cost of the construction or on the square footage, whichever is higher. Is that right?
That's correct with respect to the staff determination of what the fee should be, and then the regulations allow the commission, of course, to reduce that if they choose to.
Okay, so I think it's very important if the commission is going to choose to reduce that, that we're clear on the record why this is an unusual case. And I heard from the maker of the motion that one reason is that his finding is that it isn't the fault of the applicant here that the CDP wasn't filed. But is there any other reason that you feel that we should be reducing the in this case, which makes it unusual?
The other reason will be that this is just a shell. It's not a construction of a home or bed and breakfast or any other visitor-serving accommodations.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Potter, or are you finished, Commissioner Schallenberger?
Well, that's exactly my worry. That would lead us open to anybody who wants to put up a garage, a seven-car garage, that we now have an argument that we should reduce the fees. So I'd like to have it more substantive than that, why we're doing it.
Well, Madam Chair, Commissioner Schallenberger, if I may, we wrestled with this ourselves, and the reason in large measure that we did was because the commission already approved a permit for it, and he complied with what the commission did. Then there was this failure to actually come in and get the permit issued, but substantively everything was complied with. So that's a circumstance that we felt was distinguishing, and we probably would have waived it and reduced it if we'd had the discretion. So that's why I think it's not a precedent that other people can fit into.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Potter?
Oh, that was exactly my point. I think the applicant did everything that he thought he was supposed to do. He had basically an incompetent agent who's disappeared, and the senior planner in the area also set him down the wrong path. So I think Director Douglas's comments were very much on point and does create a special circumstance.
Because he had a permit.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Juan?
Yeah, I just want to make it clear, and I'm in agreement with what's being said here, but I think it needs to be clear. It isn't that it wasn't his fault, because we get a lot of applicants in here and say, oh, I didn't know, I didn't. In this case, he had a permit. Okay, he really didn't. This isn't somebody who came in, did the work, and didn't have a permit for it. This is unique, and I want to make it clear that that's the basis, not that, oh, he's a nice guy and he didn't really know what he was doing, because we get that all the time.
I may, Madam Chair, one more distinguishing feature, Ms. Cave reminded me. Under the circumstances here, very little additional staff work was required, so we didn't have to go out and do any new work.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Kruer, did you have a comment?
No, I think what the commissioners have said, and Commissioner Juan is right. This is the reason for the exception. He had a permitted project, and that I think that gives you the exception and the other issues that Director Douglas said. I strongly support that.
All right. Is there any objection to unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the commission hereby determines that the permit application fee for Coastal Development Permit number 1-09-010 shall be reduced to $3,000. All right. Thank you, staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that completes the North Coast. So that brings us to statewide. And we do have a set of minutes to be approved.
Can we get a motion on the minutes?
Approve the minutes.
Okay. We have a motion by Commissioner Way, so a second by Commissioner Potter to approve the two sets of minutes. Is there any objection to unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the minutes are approved.
That brings us to commissioners' reports. Do you have any?
Do we have any commission reports? Okay. To my left, seeing none. On the right, any commission reports? No, it looks like none today.
Okay. Then that's conservancy report. Is there anything?
No report from okay. Our conservancy rep.
Deputy Attorney General's report.
Yes, commissioners, through the chair, I have two items to report. One is in FAR versus California Coastal Commission. The Court of Appeal, in an unpublished decision, affirmed the trial court's denial of a petition for writ of mandate challenging the commission's approval of a permit for the Doyle's home in Redondo Beach. The issues included view blockage and protection of visual resources. So that was a nice win on behalf of Deputy Attorney General Lori Perlman in our Los Angeles office. And the second matter I have to report is in the Walla Festivals Committee versus California Coastal Commission, the trial court has now denied the petition for writ of mandate seeking to set aside the executive director's issuance of a cease and desist order. The court found that the commission does have permit jurisdiction over fireworks, and a very nice decision obtained by Deputy Attorney General Joe Rasconi in our Oakland office. And that concludes my report.
All right, thank you. Mr. Douglas?
Yes, Madam Chair. Let's do the public education grants first. This is a grant recommendation based on the fact that we had set aside $25,000 in the whale tail money for a contingency that has now been lifted. So I'll turn it over to Sylvie Lee to make a brief presentation.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Staff is requesting that the commissioners approve $25,000 in grant funding to three different nonprofit organizations. As Director Douglas just said, the $25,000 was set aside as a reserve in September 2008 to be awarded later this fiscal year. It was being saved in case any special opportunity came up, but none was identified. So staff is now recommending dividing the funds between three worthy projects that just missed the cut for being recommended for competitive whale tail grants this past March. All three provide coastal and marine education, and all three target the general public. They are described in detail in the staff report. Very briefly, the three recommended grantees are the Algolita Marine Research Foundation to create a website with an interactive GIS map of the garbage patch in the North Pacific Gyre, the Laguna Ocean Foundation to hire a docent to help protect the tide pools at Heisler Park Marine Reserve that are being loved to death by thousands of visitors, and San Diego Canyonlands to mobilize residents to adopt their local canyons and the creek that runs through them so they can restore habitat and clean the water that drains to the ocean. And as always, these grants are made possible by people who purchased the Whale Tail license plate. Thank you.
That completes the staff report, and we have a recommendation for you.
Thank you. We need a motion on the recommendation. Commissioner Wesel?
Yes, I move that the commission approve the three grants recommended by the staff for the Whale Tail license plate funding, FY 2008-09, and authorize the executive director to enter into the appropriate agreements.
Second.
And we have a motion by Commissioner Wesel, second by Commissioner Kruer. They're recommending a yes vote. Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the commission approves the three grants.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Sully. I passed around earlier a copy of this latest book on that the commission has published here. It's actually published by the University of California. Else we probably wouldn't have had it printed in China. It's an excellent addition to the public recreation series. There's one more book that needs to be done for Commissioner Potter's district, and I think Commissioner Ashajian's as well. Yes. No, we're planning to do that. We don't want to leave you out.
Just keep their pictures out of it, okay?
I think those of you who remember Steve Scholl, who used to work for the Coastal Commission, I mean, he's really been the lead on this, working with a lot of staff, volunteers, to put this book together, and it's excellent. It's really outstanding if you've had a chance to thumb through it. And I want to thank Linda Laughlin for getting these postcards, paying for these out of her own pocket, and having her sister do the graphics on it. So that's quite nice. Thank you, Linda, for doing that. And I really encourage you to get a copy. You know, it's never too early to start your holiday shopping for whatever holiday you celebrate and give gifts at. The last thing I have to mention is that we do ask you in our legislative report to take a position on a bill, AB 64, Kerkorian. This bill is a very complex bill. It deals with renewable energy project review in the state of California. And I'm not going to go through all the provisions of it, but the ones that really affect the commission most directly are the provisions that preempt local government and other state agency jurisdiction over renewable projects. Your LEDS director has been having conversations with the author and author staff and has been assured that they will accept amendments that will exempt projects in the coastal zone. And it's not just projects in the coastal zone, because many of these renewable projects are outside the coastal zone, but this commission has the authority to review them under federal consistency because some federal action is required. So it's both projects in the coastal zone and those requiring federal consistency review that we feel should be excluded from the preemption provision of the bill. There's also the concern of preempting local governments in their review of renewable projects, because if they're preempted, then there's a question of, in the coastal zone, whether or not the commission would see any of those on appeal. So we're working with the author. The other policies are really beyond the jurisdiction, or issues that are raised by the bill we felt were beyond the jurisdiction or concern of the commission. But we would like to get your support for a position of opposing the bill unless it's amended to accept those exclusions of projects in the coastal zone or subject to federal consistency review.
All right. Commissioner Wan?
Yeah. Do you need a motion for the
yes.
commission? I'll move
yes.
that the commission take a position of oppose unless amended as specified by Mr. Douglas.
Okay. Is there a second? All right. That was a second by Commissioner Kruer. Are there commissioners that would like to address this? Commissioner Ashajian?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did have bring this to Executive Director's Station last month, and I'm happy to say that our assemblyman has withdrawn his name from the proposal. As much as I'm supportive that we stay within the decision-making process And I don't know what our level of authority is to include other jurisdiction, because I don't want to exclude County Board of Supervisors. We have numerous ag properties that can end up becoming solar panels, and I don't seem to like the idea that much. And I think all local jurisdictions should be part of that decision-making process and not be exempted from this process at all.
All right. Any other comments? Is there any objection to unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, we've approved the action.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, is that all you have, Mr. Douglas? Or
No, I think Commissioner Schellenberger
has. Yes, I know that. I just wondered if you were finished.
Do you want me to be finished?
Commissioner Schellenberger. Commissioner Schellenberger had a commissioner report that she indicated she forgot to give. So,
But before that, I actually have a question of staff on AB 650, and I'm curious if you can tell us what's happening with this Half Moo Bay issue. It's just a spot bill. You don't need to look it up. But there are a couple of bills in the legislature that looking for solutions on Half Moo Bay, and
is anything happening? Yes, we have been asked if we would come to the commission and ask for a position of supporting a bill that would appropriate $10 million to the city of Half Moon Bay to cover their liability under the court decision that they chose not to appeal and that got them in the situation that they're in. And that $10 million would come from an infrastructure, either bond measure or some appropriation under infrastructure guidelines. My sense is that we don't want to support the diversion of money from, this is not infrastructure. This is really to help bail out the city from a really bad decision that they made. We've indicated to the representatives of the city in the legislative process that we would certainly recommend the commission stay neutral unless the funding comes from a source like park bond measures for parks that really would end up having a negative effect on potential coastal projects and resources. And in this case, our response to them was, no, we're not going to recommend that the commission support $10 million from the source that they're talking about. We're not suggesting that you oppose it either, but we're just not going to recommend that you support it. So I don't know where they're going with it, and I don't know what the legislature is going to do with it. But
all right. Commissioner Clark, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I have a question for staff. Peter, on SB 4, Oppeza, State Beaches and Parks, smoking, this particular bill appears that it would prohibit smoking on state beaches. Does staff have a feel for that? Because I'm inclined to support that.
Well, ever since I stopped smoking, I don't really care. But no, we don't. It's the kind of use that seems to me to be a policy question for the legislature. If the commission feels, based on your judgment and experience with how the public reacts to smoking on a beach,
right,
you're certainly free to recommend that we represent a position for you. But we don't have a recommendation for you.
Good way to bring Commissioner Graham off the beach.
Commissioner Juan?
Well, you know, there actually is an issue. Because people who smoke on the beach also throw their butts on the beach. I mean, the little stub ends is what I mean.
Right.
Except Commissioner Cram.
And, well, those too.
And that winds up in the ocean, and that is an issue for us. So I think we, you know, I'm sort of inclined to
bring it back
to Commissioner Clark to go along with what you're saying, and maybe we ought to take a look at that. Because aside from the air pollution issues, the big issue for us is those cigarette ends that wind up on the beach. Because most people who smoke wind up just putting it out wherever it is convenient for them to put it out, and particularly in the sand.
I would like to see us take a support position.
All right. Would you like to make a motion then?
I'll move a support position on SB 4, Oropesa State Beaches and Parks smoking ban.
Okay. We have a motion by Commissioner Clark, a second by Commissioner Hueso, recommending a position of support for this bill. Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Okay, we have a comment first by Commissioner Schellenberger.
I would request Commissioner Clark to consider amending his motion instead of taking a position to ask staff to do an analysis of it and bring it back. I think it, as a general rule, having not seen the bill itself and not having had staff analyze it, we're not in a position to fully know what's happening with this bill, so I agree with the position, but I think that we should have an analysis before us before we take a position on it.
Let me just support that, because I'm not in a position to tell you whether this bill has been amended, and it may actually be doing something very different. So we can bring that back.
I will amend my motion to have staff do an analysis of this bill and bring it back with the idea of potential support by the commission.
Yes, we'll do that. I think that makes a lot of sense.
All right. Any objection then to the motion on the floor? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Thank you.
And Commissioner Schellenberger, did you have a commissioner report?
I did. I'm sorry I missed that item before. I just wanted to make sure that the commission and people listening know that in honor of Commissioner Wan's recent landmark birthday, that in her honor, a major trailhead in the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy was dedicated to her. So it will. There's a huge sign making it the Sara Wan Trailhead, and it's one of those giant, almost the size of something Caltrans would put up. And it was very cool, and so I thought you all should know that, and you know, so that was my report.
And we've
congratulations.
And I've asked Jack to make sure that the Conservancy doesn't place it in a visually sensitive location.
Okay.
Commissioner Wan said it's better this way to have the trail named instead of a memorial trail.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay, we have two public comments that I'd like to take before we adjourn today. And the first is Rick Zabur, followed by Susan McCabe. 3 minutes.
Good afternoon, Chairperson Neely and honorable commissioners. My name is Rick Zabur of the law firm of Latham & Watkins, and I'm here today on behalf of our client, Poseidon Resources. Poseidon would like to address you in response to a request from your staff concerning the Carlsbad Desalination Project's estimated impingement impacts. We have copies of a letter to the commission concerning this issue that we'll share with you after my comments. Specifically, during Poseidon's Regional Water Quality Control Board proceedings, Poseidon and the regional board staff discovered a minor calculation error in Poseidon's impingement estimate, which was based on data Poseidon had provided to the commission and to the regional board. As we explained in our letter, when Poseidon corrected the calculation error using the same data, it resulted in a slight increase in the project's estimated impingement when it is operating under standalone conditions from 2.12 pounds to 3.43 pounds per fish of fish per day. When the Coastal Commission approved the permit for this project, it found that the project's impingement impacts would be de minimis and insignificant based upon, one, the minimal 2.12 pounds of fish per day that would be impinged, two, the 0.5 feet per second intake velocity at the project's intake bar racks, which is consistent with US EPA's best available technology guidance, and three, the fact that the project would impinge less fish than the average daily consumption of an adult pelican. Poseidon's proposed operations have not changed, and the project would continue to impinge a minimal amount of fish in comparison to the potable water it would supply to 300,000 people. Further, the project's intake velocity remains at the 0.5 feet per second at the bar racks and has not changed which is not consistent with your staff's assertions. and the updated impingement estimate of 3.43 pounds per day is still less than an adult pelican consumes daily. Your staff has suggested to us that the change in impingement estimate may require Poseidon to provide additional mitigation and has requested that Poseidon apply for an amendment to its permit. However, the regional board has ordered its staff to prepare a mitigation plan that is consistent with the 55.4 acres of mitigation provided under the Marine Life Mitigation Plan approved by the Commission, and it has not required any additional mitigation in response to the updated impingement estimate. Accordingly, we believe that the 55.8 acres of mitigation will fully mitigate the project's entrainment and impingement impacts, and that no further mitigation is required. Further, Poseidon's permit is clear as to when an amendment is required, and no, quote, physical, operational, or delivery capacity increases have occurred to the project that would require an amendment under these terms. Your staff has requested a meeting with Poseidon to discuss these issues, and we obviously would be happy to sit down and meet with them and hopefully resolve these issues. But we did want to give you a sense for Poseidon's views with respect to this request. We thank you for giving us an opportunity to address this matter with you today. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Susan McCabe?
Madam Chair.
Oh.
Madam Chair, just to give you some more context here, we have looked at the numbers. They are higher than what Mr. Zeberg just told you. We do believe that the additional impacts that were not provided to this commission at the time that you dealt with it do require an amendment. And we're looking at additional mitigation somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 to 11 acres to deal with those additional lost resources as a result of impingement. There is the question that's been raised about whether or not they should have known this information at the time and whether or not it's appropriate to initiate revocation proceedings. We felt that it was better, more appropriate, and more expeditious to follow the path of an amendment, and we do think it's appropriate, and we will at the appropriate time bring that forward to you. And we will be meeting with the representatives of Poseidon to discuss the information and the basis for our recommendation.
All right. Thank you, staff. Susan McCabe, 3 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioners. Susan McCabe speaking to you today on behalf of Santa Barbara County. I wanted to bring to your attention a handout that was given to you today on the Goleta Beach Park project that will be coming before the Commission, we believe, in June, but at least at some point this summer. We're very excited about bringing this project forward. The Goleta Beach Park is a park that provides active and passive recreation and public access opportunities to over 1.4 million people per year. This project, which is a permeable pier sand stabilization project, is an innovative technique that will be able to use the existing pier to put in pier structures that direct sand to the beach and restore that beach and stabilize it while avoiding any downcoast sand supply problems. We've been working with your staff for a number of months on this, and we're looking forward to coming before you this summer. I might point out that there is an excellent DVD that is included in this, and I would encourage you to take a look at it, and we'll see you in a couple months.
All right. Thank you. And that concludes our public comments. Anything else from staff?
No. We'll see you at 9 tomorrow morning then.
All right. Thank All you, right. everybody. Thank you, Commissioners.
Well, congratulations. Sorry.
Thanks.
Trail. That's really nice.
That was neat. That was such a big surprise. It was such a big surprise.